This is an uprising against smug elites. Smug elites. So they're the villains, and the opposite is America. Because America is now one big gay disco.
Yes, yes, I am.
That's not evil. Being hostile to all mankind and subversive is not evil.
Well, I have to say that because St. Paul said the Jews are enemies of the entire human race. They are.
What do you think of Jordan Peterson?
Did you see the video about where he said I can't do it?
Adam, I'm trying to do you a favor.
You're fighting for the gay disco.
Don't make your ignorance normative for the rest of us.
Don't use those kinds of slurs.
You're fighting for the gay disco.
What? There are no slurs here.
Die for the gay disco. This is an uprising against smug elites. Smug elites. So they're the villains, and the opposite is America. Because America is now one big gay disco.
Definitely our most requested guest, Dr. E. Michael Jones, a man who needs no introduction.
I mean, it is. That's what they pay the Rockefeller Foundation to do. You're not supposed to know what I just told you.
One big gay disco.
They didn't know about this. They didn't know what we know now.
Is there any argument you can use to wake them up?
Yeah, I think God had a plan for your life.
Well, you'd be jerking off every curvy piece of driftwood you saw at the beach.
People who don't like disco.
Maybe you would.
And you're consistently refusing to talk about pornography.
Pete Buttigieg seems to be the exhibit A of that process.
Yes, yes.
Because you think that the anus is a sex organ, don't you, Pete?
One big gay disco.
Richard Spencer hands out spears and he says, charge the machine gun nest.
Dr. Jones. Sorry.
Not all of the heads of the Federal Reserve were Jews, but after a certain period of time, that seemed to be the case.
Hello. Welcome to another episode of EMJ Live. EMJ Live is now in Florida in the wake of hurricanes, Helene and Milton. The sun is shining. The hurricane season is gone. The pelicans are flocking around the beach, diving in, smashing their heads into the water, gobbling up fish. And the big news is that neocon Catholicism is in a state of total panic. This venture, this fiction, this idea is going down the drain as we speak. And all the people who feed at the trough of these foundations that have kept this thing on life support for, some 40 some years now, are in a panic state, okay? They're pulling out all the stops. And the latest stop to be pulled out is David Larson, Crisis Magazine, Nazis Make Bad Catholics. Now, before I go any further, I have to say that I got a lot of grief from the white boys when the Holocaust narrative came out, because I said that the original Holocaust narrative was about the Catholics. And I said the paradigmatic concentration camp was Dachau. Dachau was created in 1933, 10 years before Auschwitz. The paradigmatic camp was Dachau. The group that was being punished there were the Catholic priests. And the point of this was that Germany was being punished for atheism, the sin of atheism. That book came out in 1955. 3 years later, the Jews hijacked that narrative with Elie Wiesel's book, Night. La Nuit, it was written in French, not by Elie Wiesel. It was written by François Mauriac, who had a great command of the French language. He took Elie Wiesel's memoir, Und die Welt hat geschwiegen, it was in Yiddish, and turned it into a Nobel Prize vehicle for Elie Wiesel. Okay, so what's new here? We've already been through the state of panic that came to us from Catholic Answers last week when Trent Horn said it was a sin to deny the Holocaust without defining either what a sin is or what the Holocaust was. Okay, now we have David Larson, who is taking, apparently the word got out that Trent Horn didn't really make it, didn't really put a dent in what he was supposed to do. And so now it looks as if it's David Larson's turn. And so he says things like, again, I want to give him credit for dealing with the Catholic thing. But by the way, you didn't mention that I did that, and you didn't mention that I took a lot of grief for it. But anyway, that's beside the point. David Larson writes, an Orthodox rabbi, who is now a key investor in Pornhub, these people attacked him. These are unnamed people. We don't know who's doing this attacking, some anonymous Catholics, suggesting falsely that Orthodox Jews want more pornography in society. Okay, as I said, wait a minute, we'll never be able to check this up. This is the essence of this piece of, this wretched piece of propaganda. He doesn't name one name. Who is this rabbi? Who is this Orthodox rabbi who doesn't have a name? Well, it's Solomon Friedman. Okay, and if he had been, if we were all stupid and dependent on this information, we wouldn't know about him at all. But the fact of the matter is, he's all over the internet, including interviews like this one.
Out of all the businesses you guys could buy, why did you guys target buying Pornhub?
Yeah, so we saw an extraordinary opportunity. You know, the fact that it's noteworthy that we've made the acquisition, that should tell you that this is a space that has not had mainstream investment, right? That it's a space, I always said, you know, when we looked at the business, it's a business that's legal. Not only is it legal, but in every Western democracy, it's constitutionally protected. It could not be outlawed, even if you wanted to, but it doesn't have that legitimacy. And one of the reasons for that—
Wait, stop. We just got to the point here. Why are all these articles talking about a rabbi owning Pornhub? Because the rabbi is, quote, a man of God, close quote. And men of God give legitimacy. And that's the whole point of this thing. All of these articles are to talk about how porn is somehow legitimate because Jews do it. So wait a minute, let's go back to this thing, suggesting falsely that Orthodox Jews want more pornography in society. Who ever said that? This is once again a straw man, complete straw man. No one ever said that. Is David Larson, I hope you're listening, okay? Because I have a question for you. Did anyone ever say that Orthodox Jews want more pornography in society? No, absolutely not. This is a ridiculous statement. It's a straw man. These are the only arguments they're coming up with. Are you saying that Jews are not behind pornography? Are you saying that it's somehow, it's just a coincidence that this Jew, this rabbi, was involved in pornography? Are Jews disproportionately involved in pornography? Is that something we're allowed to talk about? Are you an anti-Semite because you say Jews are disproportionately involved in pornography? Let's look at some of the evidence here. Of course, not brought into this article. Let's go. What's the evidence here? Okay. This is a man, Professor Nathan Abrams. He quoted this in his book, but let's get to the heart of the matter here. It's all over the place. The guy who really broke this story was Luke Ford, who's still on the internet. And he's interviewing Al Goldstein, who was the publisher of Screw magazine, one of the early pornography magazines. It goes back all the way back to the 60s. Luke Ford asked Goldstein why Jews were dramatically overrepresented in the porn industry. And Goldstein answered, the only reason the Jews are in pornography is that we think that Christ sucks. Catholicism sucks. We don't believe in authoritarianism. Pornography thus becomes a way of being, of defiling Christian culture. And as it penetrates to the very heart of the American mainstream and no doubt consumed by these very same wasps, its subversive character becomes more charged. It goes on and on there. Thanks to Luke Ford, that is now part of the record. Oh, it's missing from David Larson's article. Damn, what happened there? I'm sure that was on the tip of his tongue. Wanted to put in just a slip on his part. Are you still maintaining the Jews are not intimately involved, disproportionately involved in the production of pornography? Do you want to know why they're involved in it? Well, I got a book that it can explain that. It's called Libido Dominandi, Sexual Liberation and Political Control. The Jews are involved in this because it allows them to control the goyim and render them impotent, in probably more sense than just one here, and sidelines the entire culture of America. That's what happened over the course of my lifetime. The Jews got more and more power because they became more and more subversive and undermined the moral fiber of the American people, because once you do that, people are easy to control. Okay, we got in here, don't we have something? There's a Nathan Rabbi, Nathan, who's this guy? Nathan Abrams. Yeah, professor from England. He took my article, the original article that started the Jewish revolutionary spirit, took it, basically copied, cut and pasted it, and just changed one thing. When I said pornography is bad, he said it's good because Jews like pornography. Jews are good at promoting pornography. It's the only difference, And now that's been taken down. You have to go into the Wayback Machine because some Jewish genius realize this makes Jews look bad. What? It took about 15 years for them to realize this made them look bad. So once again, we go on here, and one of the fundamental issues here in Larson's article is his inability to create categories, proper categories. He makes one category mistake after another, and after a while, you begin to realize it's deliberate. So there's no such thing as a Jew. Let's get this straight. If you say the Jews, you're an anti-Semite, and that's because it's totally a category of the mind. And proof of this is very simple, because some Jews are liberal and some Jews are conservative. And for the mentally challenged at places like Crisis Magazine, they are the ultimate categories. So there can be no category Jew. So this is what he says here. For every John Stewart pushing us to the left, there's a Ben Shapiro pushing us to the right. So therefore, there are no Jews. Don't exist as a category. Well, maybe there's a better explanation here. Let's reframe this. Left-wing Jews believe in abortion. Okay? And they're perfect. As a matter of fact, it's a fundamental Jewish value. As a matter of fact, it's a Jewish sacrament. They don't like that word, but that's what it is. And it's okay if you kill babies in the womb. And now let's go to the other side of the spectrum. Now you have Ben Shapiro. It happened a year ago. It's a little over a year ago when he lost whatever credibility he had as a conservative because he became rabid, frothing at the mouth, rabid in defense of the Israeli genocide of Palestinian people, which means he's okay if the Jews kill babies, but you have to do it with an F-16. And not with the abortion curette. So there is a consensus here among Jews. And it's basically, if you do something they don't like, they have a right to kill you. It's that simple. And they're proving it day after day, one after another. These guys are being killed. Innocent women and children are being killed. Wait a minute. Aren't we talking, that doesn't appear on the neocon radar screen here. Doesn't appear at all. Okay, why is that? Now we're going to get into the theology here. Now he's taking off his political cap and putting on his theology thinking cap. And he says, the Christian view that all human beings, regardless of race, have a tendency towards sin. That is being ignored by these Nazi Catholics. Okay. Making one race unequally to blame for sin or for Christ's crucifixion, for that matter, misses the point. Well, wait a minute. Is there one group of people that is responsible for Christ's crucifixion? St. Paul thinks there is. I guess he forgot when he put on his theologian hat, he forgot to mention St. Paul, 1 Thessalonians 2. The Jews are the people who killed Christ, and they are enemies of the entire human race. Oh, he forgot that one. Okay, that's not in the neocon, the lexicon of neocon Catholicism. Now, there's also a category mistake here. And the guy who, one of the guys who made this category mistake was the former editor of Crisis Magazine, Phil Lawler, I'm talking about. And he quoted the Council of Trent, in which he said, sin is responsible for the death of Christ. Sinners are the ones who are responsible for the death of Christ. And then he played his trump card and said, oh, so therefore it's not Jews. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Let's do the Venn diagram here. This is sinners, okay? And where is this Jews over here? And there's a lot of space between those two circles? No, of course not. Of course not. If you're going to put the two diagrams, this is sinners, okay? That's a big circle. The little circle is Jews, and it goes completely inside that circle, that category. All Jews are sinners. All Catholics are sinners, okay? But the Jews are specifically responsible for one heinous act in human history, and that is the death of Jesus Christ. St. Paul said so. St. Peter said so in the beginning of Acts of the Apostles when he shows up in Jerusalem. And he says to the, this is after Pentecost, he says to the Jews, you killed Christ. And they're cut to the heart, and they say, what must we do to be saved? And he says, you must be baptized. Now, back to Crisis Magazine. This is the founding document. This is the beginning of what we're calling neocon conservatism. Okay? It was created in 1982, 1 year after I started Fidelity Magazine, which is now Cultures Wars Magazine. And it was basically created by two men, Michael Novak and Ralph McInerney. Okay, Michael Novak burst on the scene. He was a Slovak from Johnstown, Pennsylvania, got on the scene as an up-and-coming young Catholic in the 1960s, got involved in promoting birth control. I guess everyone saw him as a prospective talent to undermine the Catholic faith. And so he ended up as religion editor of Time Magazine during the Second Vatican Council. The original editor was Bob Kaiser, and he was part of, got kicked out of that because of a conspiracy between Maliki Martin and his Bob Kaiser's wife. Maliki arranged for to run off with Bob Kaiser's wife. The AJC, the American Jewish Committee, and B'nai B'rith were paying Maliki Martin to be a double agent, working for Jewish interests to subvert the Catholic Church's teaching on the Jews. In order to get rid of him, Maliki Martin had to conspire with Bob Kaiser's wife and say that he was insane. He was driven out of the job. Michael Novak took the job over. If you do this job, if you're working for Time Magazine, you're working for the CIA, whether you know it or not, and he created the spirit of Vatican II, which was the subversion of Vatican II. At some point, he met Ralph McInerney, who was, if you read my relationship with Ralph McInerney, read the final chapter of Logos Rising. Okay, but this is early on. Ralph McInerney wrote an article in Crisis. It was called Catholicism in Crisis, and then it was called Crisis. Wrote an article in that. And the title of the article was, Ich bin ein Bitburger. I am a Bitburger. I'm a citizen of Bitburg. But he's really talking about the cemetery in Bitburg. It's a play on Ich bin ein Berliner, which was Kennedy's statement in Berlin. He should have said, Ich bin auch Berliner, because what he said in German means I'm a jelly donut. But everybody loved it, even though he blew that. And here is Ralph rechanneling that, Ich bin ein Bitburger. He's talking about the Nazis who were buried in this cemetery. And the Jews were outraged that Ronald Reagan would visit a cemetery where Nazis were buried. Jews are like this. They believe in taboos. They believe if you go near someone who is taboo, you become taboo. It's in the gospel. You know, you're unclean. You don't want to associate with unclean, taboo people. Jesus Christ broke that taboo by eating with tax collectors and prostitutes, but the Jews never got over it. And so Ralph did something taboo. And so what happened? In the middle of the night, Ralph gets a call, and it's Michael Novak, and he's got panic. This is the theme of today's podcast, panic. Panic in his voice, and he says to Ralph, Norman's upset. Norman is Norman Podhoretz, the power, the neocon, the big Jew neocon, who along with Irving Kristol and Midge Dekter are the people who fund Catholic magazines like Crisis or like First Things, another flagship of neocon conservatism. Okay? Ralph kind of shrugged it off, but it was one of those moments where he suddenly realized this is what's going on here. This has been 40 years of Jewish propaganda coming out of the mouths of people who call themselves Catholic. And now Crisis, apparently it's on hard times now. I doubt very much if they're getting Bradley Foundation money. That's what started it. That's why Michael Novak was so upset that Norman Podhoretz was upset. I doubt very much that they're doing that, but the form was created by the founder. And the form is neocon conservatism. And it's collapsing as we speak. It's collapsing because it's based on a narrative that no one believes anymore. And no one believes this narrative anymore, largely because of Jewish behavior. The Jews have earned their reputation as being enemies of the entire human race, largely if they hadn't done it before, and they certainly did it in the past year by their engaging in genocide in Gaza. And people have woken up to that fact. And people like Trent Horn and David Larson don't know. They're standing on the platform. The train is long gone. The train of Logos left the neocon platform a long time ago. And these people don't know. And they think they could come up with this propaganda and put life back in the corpse. You can't put life in a corpse. It can tell you, it's like the Frankenstein monster was the illusion that you could put life in the corpse. You can take all the electricity, whatever you want, and this thing is dead. Neocon Catholicism is dead. And it's time to move on. It's time to rejoice that it's over, because the truth will rise up in its place. That's my rant. Let's hear what you have to say.
Okay. Hello, everybody. Dr. Jones, you can hear me, right?
I can.
All right, good. I think everyone else can. Hello, this is Mike Bajakis, Dr. Jones' assistant in South Bend. Don't you just love technology? Welcome to the Q&A segment of the show. Call-ins are made via Telegram. Link is going to be in the description of wherever you guys happen to be. Quick rules for the stream. Quick rules for the stream. Try to keep questions on subject. Be respectful of time, and do not forget to mute yourself. And then after we do the Telegram chats, we go to the various Rumble, Cozy, whatnot, and read off what you guys type in. All right, let's get going here. Butch Mailhot. So go ahead, Butch, are you there? Let's see. Don't forget to unmute yourself. Yeah, unmute yourself on your end.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hello? Oh, hi. Very nice to talk to you, Dr. Jones. Hey, I was wondering if you're familiar with the work of Pater Edmund Waldstein and the Josias. They seem to have a kind of a similar diagnosis of the whole political landscape and its lack of morality.
Did you say Edmund Waldstein?
Yeah, Pater Edmund Waldstein?
I know his father, Mikhail Waldstein. He was teaching at Notre Dame for a while. Yes, I know, but yeah. I'm not familiar with this group, though.
Oh, yeah, it's fairly amazing. There's Chad Pecknold's involved and Patrick Deneen. They go by like post-liberal stuff. But Pater Edmund specifically, and I would say Chad Pecknold, they have a similar diagnosis of the what you would say is caused by Jews and by the revolutionary spirit. And they would simply say, no, it's actually just liberalism as an Enlightenment liberalism. And you have right liberals, which are, we call like neocon conservatives. And you have left liberals, which we call progressives. And it's kind of explanatory because then it covers all religions. So you can have a Catholic who's a left liberal or a right liberal, and you get your neocon and your progressive there, and you can have a Jew on either sides, and that kind of addresses it. But it also makes it, to me, it's explanatory in that, there's nothing necessarily, I'm not an expert in the Talmud or anything, but if you talk to a Jew, I have Jewish friends, they don't say stuff like, oh man, I love abortion, I love pornography. They don't talk like that. They don't seem to, but they are liberals. They're very much liberals, just like Joe Biden's liberal or Kamala Harris' liberal. They have very aligned worldviews. And so have you ever put any thought to maybe it's Jews being really liking liberalism because it makes their religion?
Wait a minute. I just dealt with this. That's the neocon Catholicism tries to say that it's liberal versus conservative. And so because of that, there is no category of Jew. Because you got John Stewart on the one side, he's liberal, and you have Ben Shapiro on the other side, and he's conservative, so therefore there's no category Jew. Liberal is a category of the mind. Conservative is a category of the mind. They were created for political purposes, and usually to divide people so that they can't identify who's in charge of who's doing what, okay? I am proposing Jew is a category of reality. Hoi Judaoi has been a crucial, essential category of reality ever since St. John wrote his gospel. So do you want to deal with realities or do you want to deal with fictions that are created for purposes?
Look, can I just, sorry, this is my fault. I didn't clarify it correctly. I'm sorry. When they say liberal, they're not talking, they're saying that conservatives are liberals. So just kind of like you, the conservative is a liberal and the progressive is a liberal. The liberal is a liberal. They're both liberals. The dichotomy is between Catholics and liberals. And then you'd have your conservatives and your, what we call liberals or whatever on the anti-Catholic side. They're both anti-Catholic. They both rely on private judgment, not on the authority of the moral law. It's all just what you feel and what you think. And, it's some kind of, mechanism of liberalism that came from the Enlightenment, from the French Revolution, and a little bit before. They it starts with Occam and kind of moves its way up through Luther and stuff, but they it's this rebellious spirit of just self of self-reliance and private judgment.
Okay, all right, stop. I've been dealing with this in my book on American identity. Okay, the three fundamental categories of reality in American life, the three ethnic groups, the three religions are Protestant, Catholic, Jew. At the beginning, Protestantism was the dominant force in America. These are the founders. They were Puritans. Okay, Massachusetts Bay Colony was a Puritan outpost. Puritans are regicides, and the man who wrote that book, the Puritan epic is Paradise Lost, John Milton wrote it, and the hero is Satan. Okay, so you can go back there and you can try. So I did with the book. It'll be out in the early 2025. Okay, but to say Catholic and liberal, they're two different categories. They're two different realms, two different languages that don't fit. And you end up with category mistakes here. And that's the problem here. You always end up with category mistakes where you're identifying, you can't identify the source of the problem. That's the problem with this whole liberal conservative thing. And secondly, beyond that, there is basically no difference between liberals and conservatives because there is the Hegelian synthesis of liberalism and conservatism. is libertarianism, which believes basically in sodomy and usury. So there's ultimately, there's no, the categories collapse as soon as you bring reality to them.
I think that's the point, is that what we call conservatism in America and liberalism are really the same thing. They're just different preferences of what's important. Right. And the real difference is those who submit to the moral law as interpreted by the Catholic Church and have harmony with the Bishop of Rome, and those who reject it.
Right. Yep. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Thank you very much, Butch. I'll keep going here. Let's go to, let's see, Simon Foot Soldier. Go ahead, Simon.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can.
Hi, Dr. Jones. It's a pleasure to talk to you. So I don't know if you have, I noticed the feud between sort of you and Nick Fuentes. I don't even know if you call it a feud, but it's a little disappointing, but that's okay. I don't know if you, I was just curious if you have seen any of his recent coverage and analysis about a group called like the neo-reactionaries that are the sort of the neocons from what I understand. And they talk like some of the big players are Peter Thiel and a lot of the newer conservative media outlets and then Twitter accounts that are more openly racist and things like that, but afraid to call out the Jew, so to speak. And I was wondering if you had seen this stuff, if how this kind of neo-reactionary group that J.D. Vance, the vice presidential candidate, is a part of, I would say, and how does that figure into these categories of, Jew, non-Jew, conservative, liberal, because I think, like you just said, they all kind of fit in this liberal kind of context.
Yeah, so the reason I started writing The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit is I was trying to figure out whether Irving Kristol was a liberal or a conservative. Well, in the 1930s, he was a Trotskyite. Well, that sounds pretty liberal to me. And then in the 1970s, he creates this thing called neoconservatives. So now, I began to think these categories are meaningless. They're meaningless categories of the mind that basically get created for political purposes, for political effect. But the one constant identity was his Jewish identity. And the Jewish idea that you have a right to kind of overthrow the existing order of things, or you have a right to reorder that disorder according to the channels that you are creating. Okay, so you're going back to something. None of this had any foundation in reality. And so the only foundation I could find in reality was ethnic reality. And the ethnic groups were constantly at war with each other. The three ethnic groups are Protestant, Catholic, Jew. And they're at war with each other. The Catholics and the Protestants made an alliance in the 1920s, in spite of nativism, to rein in the Jews in Hollywood with the production code. The Catholics succeeded after the Protestants failed. But then after the war, the Protestants broke away and allied with the Jews. And you had people like Paul Blanchard, who was a sexually liberated Protestant minister, basically working with the Jews to overthrow the production code. So all of these alliances are kind of contemporary categories of the mind, contemporary program that allows Jews, Catholics, or Protestants to put some type of political program into action. After they broke the production code, the Jews got so powerful that they just bought up Catholics. They got Catholics. The Catholics had, like Novak, is he a liberal or is he conservative? Well, you have to ask in a particular space of time. He was certainly a liberal during the time of Vatican II. He was certainly Mr. Conservative by the 1980s when he founded Crisis Magazine. What were the two founding issues for Crisis Magazine? One, the undermining the church, the bishop's statement on nuclear weapons, and number two, undermining Catholic social teaching by bringing out this book called The Spirit of Democratic Capitalism. So it's obvious why the Jews would support this thing, because Michael Novak is a double agent working to subvert the Catholic Church, either by using liberalism or by using conservatism. But the main purpose here is subversion of the Catholic Church, destruction of the political power of the Catholic ethnic group. These are the bedrock foundations that you have to get to in order to understand these changing ideologies.
Okay, I appreciate that's a good breakdown of it, and I think understanding the history is crucial. But I was curious that if you have followed in or have heard of this neo-reactionary group.
No, it's the first time I've heard that word. Now Twitter, Elon Musk wants me to know Nick Fuentes. Every day I get five videos from Nick Fuentes on my Twitter feed. This is home. This is not for E. Michael Jones. This is home. And I don't, everyone out there, do you all get these same things? I think this is tailored to me. I think that the algorithm tailors it. There's a combination of what I click on and what they want me to see. And I think that this man is being promoted as the spokesman for the Catholic Church for a certain group of people. Obviously not for everyone, but for a certain demographic, this man is the guy who's the spokesman for the Catholic Church. The consequence is he's an easy target for Trent Horn and for David Larson. It's an easy target. And so I think I can't judge Nick Fuentes' intentions, but I think I can judge the algorithm's intentions and Elon Musk's intentions. And I think that's why he's being promoted, because there's a kind of division there. There's a kind of conflicted. Nick got upset when I said he was conflicted. Well, he is conflicted. Maybe he's getting better. He changes all the time. We all change all the time. He seems more Catholic. He doesn't seem to be doing the white guy stuff anymore. I don't know about the rest of the stuff. I know that Trent Horn loved to put up Sneeko as an authority on what happened in World War II. This is ridiculous. This is a straw man. And I think it's an act of desperation on their part to save a narrative that is gone. The expiration date, it's expired on neocon Catholicism, and you can't bring it back together again. Time to move on.
Okay, thank you. I just want to add one more thing if I can. I just wanted to suggest maybe that whether it was with his stuff of the last week, he had really good analysis of this kind of new big technology, kind of new emerging right wing that's sort of trying to overtake the original Trump message and kind of steer it back into the neoconservative tank. But anyways, thank you for answering my question.
You're welcome.
Right. Thank you, Simon. Let's go to GT next. Go ahead, GT. And you gotta unmute on your end. Are you there, GT? Little button in the center. There we are. You're coming in choppy. We can kind of hear you kind of still a little bit choppy. Say one more thing and let's see how it sounds.
All right, testing 1, 2, 3.
All right, try asking your question. We'll see if it goes through. If not, we'll have to go with the next guy, but go ahead. No, GT, type in, I gotta mute you, GT. It's just not coming in clear. So type it in Telegram and we can ask it a little bit coming up here shortly. It's just not coming through. Who next? Let's go to Fernando. Go ahead, Fernando. Unmute button in the center.
Okay. Good evening, Dr. Jones. Can you hear me?
I can. A little louder, though, if you can.
Yeah, it's always problems with my mic. I don't know what it is. So
it's getting better.
Good evening. Okay, I just wanted to ask, someone asked last week a question about whether you would publish your books in German. And you answered that it was difficult in Germany because of the laws to publish books there. So I wanted to know, is it a problem for you to translate these books into German and maybe print them in the US and maybe make them available for the German public, or maybe just an electronic version for people to download? Because I think many of your works could help really a German mind to understand itself and what has happened to it in the last century. So have you given that any thoughts?
Yes, I think you're right. Germany is the paradigm. It's what happens when you internalize Jewish commands. They destroy you. And Germany has been destroyed as a country largely because no one is allowed to criticize Jews there because of the Holocaust. It's that simple. You know, so I've written a number of books about that, the Holocaust narrative being the most recent. So the question is, could I publish? I think I could. I need some type of distribution in Germany. If someone's interested, I'd be happy to collaborate with people in Germany. But I've gone to the publishing houses and they all tell me basically that they would go to jail if they publish my books. So I'm not going to go to jail. I'm not going to go to jail because I'm over here in America. So if there's a way of working this out, I'd be happy to do it.
Yeah, maybe like I suggest, maybe not looking for a publisher overseas, but maybe just doing it in the US and making it even electronically available, because it's very sad to see that even Catholics in Germany, they have internalized it quite well. And even people of goodwill, if you speak or if you address these issues, they're immunized against it. It's very difficult to get through, and maybe reading something. Yeah, you cannot interrupt someone that whose book you're reading. Maybe it comes through a little better.
Okay.
Yeah, we'd be happy to have to see your books translated into German.
Are you living in Germany now?
No, I'm not. I'm not.
Okay.
I'm
okay. You can contact me at Jones at Culture. You can contact me at Jones at culturewars.com, and we can work out some type of operation here.
Okay, I'd be happy to. Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
All right, let's do one more here, and then we're going to jump to reading off questions from the various chats. Andrew O, you're going to be our last caller for the night. Are you there, Andrew?
Yeah, good afternoon. Welcome back to Florida. I had a question about Billy Graham. Did his Bible College in Florida, it just seems to me, especially also now through his son, is there any, have you ever discovered a connection between him and the CIA? It seems the Protestants always have a connection with televangelists, but then also the Samaritan's Purse being a great extension of things that destroy small countries. Have you ever seen it? Is there, or have you ever discovered a connection between the CIA and the Grahams?
Billy Graham?
Yes.
I met a man who told me his family created Billy Graham. And this man told me he was going to make me the next Rush Limbaugh. And I said, well, one Rush Limbaugh is enough. This man told me that he was created to break the idea of segregation among evangelicals. That's what his role was. That's what he told me. Now, he didn't say anything about the CIA, but this was certainly, at this time, it was a high government priority. And I'm talking about the early 50s, and I'm talking about, let's say, in the wake of the Supreme Court decision, Brown versus School Board. Brown versus School Board established race as the paradigm of American identity. What I'm trying to do in my book is to say that's not the paradigm. Ethnicity is the paradigm of identity and not race. If you talk about race, you're going to talk about something that is congenial to the power brokers. If you're talking about Brown versus School Board, you're talking about Jewish science. All the experts were Jews. Murray Friedman said it was Jewish science. This was the Jews once again trying to start, use the blacks as proxy warriors for the revolution. And the revolution was the civil rights movement. And basically they conquered the South with that revolution. And part of it was basically breaking up this idea of the evangelical idea or association in the South with segregation. And that's what this man told me. That was Billy Graham's job.
Wow. Yeah. But then you move forward to, and somehow they're still using them. It seems like you move forward now at this time of year. Samaritan's Purse helps with operations. You may have seen with Hurricane Recovery, but they distribute their, it occurred to me today, they distribute their boxes. It's world famous, of course, the Operation Christmas Child. They drop their boxes of American cheap stuff all over African countries, especially, and as you said, when an influx of cheap American goods in these poorer countries does not do them any good, would you see that? Would you say that's accurate? When over Christmas time or the holidays, there's a sudden influx of the dollar store type items coming into Kenya or wherever.
The main problem in Kenya is cheap clothing. They call it mitumba. That's the Swahili word for it. I don't know enough about this operation to say whether is it charity or is it a way of subverting the economy and rendering Kenyans completely dependent on outside help for the rest of their lives. I can't say I don't know enough about this organization to say that, but I know that their possibilities are there. One of the things I'm dealing with now is I'm trying to get the proper categories in alignment. And I'm going to tell you one thing I just learned very recently, okay, that the foundation of the Ulster colony and the foundation of the Ulster plantation, this is the word that got used for it. This is the northern counties in Ireland. The foundation of the Ulster plantation and the foundation of the Virginia plantation took place at exactly the same time. And both of them were Puritan ventures, backed by the government at that point. The Puritans would take power within 30 years of this operation. And this, again, contextualizes the racial issue, because the issue in Ulster was not what we call race, although the word is used constantly, okay, because it had a different meaning then. The point of the Ulster plantation is to exploit Irish Catholics. The point of the Virginia camp plantation is to divide the labor force between black and white. They're both basically the same thing. This is the type of reevaluation of the whole racial narrative that I'm involved in right now as the culmination of the book. Anyway, that'll be out in the beginning of next year.
Very good. Very fair. Thank you very much. Look forward to it.
Okay. Time to go to the various chats. Let's start here with Rumble from Jamers7. E. Michael Jones, what are your main arguments against orthodoxy?
I think it is an apostolic religion. It is not Protestantism, but I think it's suffered by its separation from the universal church that has to be the center. It has the center of this. If it's going to be a universal church, it has to be Rome. It's the only option. And so as a result, it ended up with ethnic churches that are, an ethnic church is in some sense contradictory, because Christianity is a message for the entire world. And an ethnic church is broken off in a sense and isolated from communion with the entire communion of the Catholic Church. That's the main problem. And so you have, in some sense, you have the same problem with orthodoxy that you have with Protestantism. When you define the Christians as the people who live in England or in Scandinavia or whatever it is, Norway, you get a national church. And that's what you have with the Orthodox. They're basically national churches that don't really get along with each other. And so they're crippled in spreading or personifying the universality of Christ's message.
Next question from the same guy. It's a good question, so I want to ask it. E. Michael Jones, what should we do with the Jews? Where should they go? Madagascar?
We have to reevaluate the idea of whether Jews can be citizens or not. It's that simple. It sounds harsh, but there's no other alternative after what we learned with the Biden administration. If you allow Jews to into your government, if you allow them to control your government, you will have constant war, you will have constant strife, and you will have constant moral subversion of the people. Jews have to be excluded from government and from institutions, influential institutions, institutions that influence the culture. They right now, they have a monopoly on this. If you're talking about the media, if you're talking about the government, if you're talking about any of these things, they have a monopoly, and we cannot tolerate this anymore. So I'm not saying people are going to move anywhere. They're moving themselves. And Israel is emptying out as we speak. I have reports, no people on Cyprus. They're moving to Cyprus. They're rushing into Cyprus, buying up property. I think they understand that that ship is going down. And the rats always leave the ship when the ship goes down. So I think that's what's happening. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying in the United States of America, we have to reevaluate the idea of Jewish citizenship, beginning with the expulsion of any dual citizen, Israel-American dual citizen, from every office in government. Can't have them anymore. That's the first step.
Next question from Cozy. May Christendom Live asks, Dr. Jones, what are your thoughts on Catholic integralism?
If by that you mean like the king, we need a king, like France needs a French king. You're going to have to define the term. That's what I understand it. It's kind of like that type of France can only exist as a monarchy, a Catholic monarchy. It's simply not applicable to America because we've never had those conditions here.
Veritasity on Cozy. While a Catholic can vote for the lesser evil, isn't a vote for Trump a vote for more genocide?
We're dealing... I've said this before, okay? I don't think, first of all, let's just limit it to something like an attack on Iran. The main problem with the first Trump administration was he couldn't control the government. He was the head of the government, and every person he appointed underneath him worked against him. I think there's a positive site aspect to this. If we're talking about following the path that the current administration is following. If that means, if by that you mean attacking Iran, I don't think it's going to happen. No, the government simply will not follow through with that thing because too many people in the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, know that it would be suicidal. So I don't think he can do it. So the question is, well, what can he do? What will he do? What are their intentions? I don't know what his intentions are. Because on the one hand, he said God saved his life at that assassination attempt. And on the other hand, it's got this rabid making Netanyahu look like a kind of wimp, this ferocious super Zionism. I don't think he's being honest. I think the Russians were right when he said that he's going to attack Moscow. Medvedev said, this is just campaign rhetoric. I think that's true because anybody knows if he attacks Moscow, they have perfect right to attack Washington. It's obvious. And they have the capability of doing it too. So I think that we have to just discount this as campaign rhetoric.
Okay. Next question from Alex on Telegram. A literary question. What are your thoughts on C.S. Lewis and the rendering of Christianity in his writings?
I think the best book he wrote is The Abolition of Man. It's a short thing. It's like a long article. The worst book he wrote was Mere Christianity. Because suddenly C.S. Lewis is like the super pope now, the super magisterium, who is going to say what all of these Protestant sects and Catholicism have in common. That's bad thinking. he didn't know what he was doing there. Who are you to say this is important in the patrimony of the Catholic faith and this is not important? who are you to rearrange this? Like, you're the super pope. You're the pope of the Protestants and you're pope of the Catholics. And I think the attempt just fell flat. It just fell flat.
C.S. Lewis never converted to Catholicism, right? He always stayed Protestant. No.
Christopher Derrick was a student of his at Cambridge. And he said that it was Ulster prejudice. He could never get over Ulster prejudice. The other thing he did late in life is he married a Jew. Joy, the book Surprised by Joy is about his wife, Joy Davidson. I think he's a Jewish divorcee. It scandalized Tolkien. And what we're seeing now is that, you know, you marry, have a Jewish wife, she's going to influence you. And it's not going to be toward Catholicism in general. I mean, you could take, like, Maritain. Okay, that's a good an example of, okay, that's, okay, maybe he did good in spite of that. He was certainly Philo-Semitic. We have the article I just wrote, that Manuel Chapman converted to Catholicism because he's a Jew who converted to Catholicism because of C.S. Lewis. And then immediately comes in and proves that he's a converso. This is in my article on Trent Horn, which is in the next issue of Culture Wars magazine. So he immediately sets up a committee. The water of baptism is not dry on his forehead. And he creates a committee called Catholics to Fight Anti-Semitism. Well, I'm sorry, but I'm suspicious when you do that. You know, people will say, well, look at Saul Alinsky. He was a communist. He was a Jew. He worked with, well, he created the Back of the Yards Neighborhood Association, which is, you know, a good thing as far as I'm concerned. The other thing is that's part of the problem here. So you have Rusty Reno married a Jew, and he, because of that, he did not get his children baptized. This is the editor of First Things. Well, then one of those children died. Well, how does that make you feel? Because baptism is necessary for salvation. So maybe this played a role at the end of C.S. Lewis's life. I don't know.
Okay, next question here is going to be from Daddy Prophet Bunny on Rumble. You recently spoke on, quote, the elder brother, end quote, comment by the Pope. In Romans 9, Paul mentions Esau and Jacob about the children of the promise. Is this about the Jews versus the church?
I think it is. About the original, the other paradigm is Cain and Abel. If you go through the Bible, elder brother is not a particularly complimentary term. And I think that the Jews picked up on that, and they didn't like the idea of being called elder brothers. So, but the original, I mean, if by elder brother you're saying we should imitate Jews and they have some type of inside track to salvation, this is all wrong. And this is part of the damage that that term did. The Jews can be saved. This is what I said, citing St. Peter. You're going to be saved by same way everyone else is saved. You can be saved if you get baptized. If you refuse to get baptized, you will be damned for all eternity. It's that simple. So it's not, there's no curse here. There's nothing inexorable about the Jews were never deprived of free will. They were deprived of their covenant. When the temple was destroyed, that covenant was over. And Jesus Christ is the new covenant. And the Catholic Church is the new Israel. And so you have to swallow your pride. You have to check your Jewish privilege at the door and come in and get baptized and be like the rest of us.
Next question is going to be on Cozy from Free Gaza. How much should the Catholic Church be involved in politics? Are Protestants justified in fearing Rome?
Protestants are paranoid because they have no secure foundation for their identity. And so that's the main source of their fear. They always fear the Catholic Church because the Catholic Church is the true church and their sects are not. Okay. What was it? Say the question again.
It was kind of like a two-parter. I don't know if they're, I mean, I'm assuming they're connected. How much should the Catholic Church be involved in politics? And
okay, that's the one I forgot. Okay. To the extent that politics impinges upon the moral order. Now, the Catholic Church does not believe in the separation of church and state. The paradigm for the Catholic Church and the state is the soul to the body. Okay, this Catholic Church is the soul, the state is the body. Okay, that's an intimate connection, but they're two separate things. And so the Catholic Church has to speak up whenever, let's say, morals are being subverted or challenged. Well, that's clearly what's happening in Gaza. This is a fundamental flouting of the basics of the moral law, the right to life. The same thing with abortion. The church cannot stand silently when people like the state of Israel, when Netanyahu, the Zionist, are murdering people with impunity. The church has to speak up. The church should have been speaking up more on this regard. And I'm saying that the main reason for the silence among the Catholics is neoconservatism. It's places like Crisis Magazine. It's like Trent Horn at Catholic Answers, because they've internalized Jewish values. And because this is widespread in the Catholic Church, there is silence when the Jews commit crimes, because people think if I criticize a Jew, I'm an anti-Semite. We got to change this attitude. It has had a devastating effect on the moral standards throughout the entire world. We have to change it. Jesus Christ criticized Jews. He could not commit a sin. Moses criticized Jews, and he was not an anti-Semite because he did it. And we are the children of Moses, and we are followers of Jesus Christ, and we have a duty to criticize Jews when they commit crimes of the sort that they're committing in Gaza. And we have a duty to limit, do whatever we can to limit their ability to do this. And the church is not doing everything it can, largely because of neocon Catholicism.
All right, Dr. Jones, it's a little bit after six. We want to do one or two more here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Cool. From Lou Brand on Telegram, what do you think about the numerous fires in Europe of Catholic churches?
Fires. It means that the natives are not going to church. That's what it means. And they have to get rid of the property. And then they use it, I don't know, to create a disco or a brewery or something like that. It's a function of the evaporation of the Catholic faith in places like all across Europe.
You think people are systematically burning these down?
Yes.
Okay. And who?
In both France and Canada.
And who's behind it?
You tell me. Who the people who hate the Catholic Church, who are they?
I think I know who they are. From Ked's Death on Cozy, advice on how to get my parents to get back to going to church and convert them to Catholicism.
You mean they are, have they been baptized? Well, you're not there to answer the question. So assuming that they have been baptized, the main vehicle is Logos, which means talking to them, and talking to them in a persistent and intelligent way by bringing up, well, I know nothing about this man. I know nothing about his parents. You could walk into a room, and when you start talking to someone you've met for the first time, you have to, well, what do we have in common? What do you believe? What do I believe? Obviously, if it's a child and parents, you know, they've been together for the child's entire life. And so he knows the neuralgic points, knows the sore spots. I've said this before, Oklahoma is 100% pro-life and 100% pro-Israel. Well, let's have a discussion about the contradictions there. That's where, these are things that I would bring up.
From Patriot Crusader S, has Dr. Jones done any speeches, discussions in German that we can listen to? Danke.
I have given speeches in German. One was to an organization where I wasn't allowed to record it because it's kind of like a secret organization. It was created by the CIA after World War II, in case the Russians came in, they were going to do something or other. There have been, I give them speeches in Berlin. I gave that was in Bavaria. I gave a speech in Berlin, did not record it. I would be happy to do podcasts in German if I can find people who are courageous enough to do it. But the German people have been totally intimidated. And so it's hard to have these conversations. I have regular conversations with Germans, but they're private. So I'm aware of what's going on there, but we have to reach a new level. I don't know what's going to happen when Trump, if he gets elected, will there be a change? There's going to be a change. Right now, the AfD is winning in the East. This is the alternative for Deutschland. There are people now who are saying, you know, we need to have an alliance with Russia. We got to get out of NATO. This is all true, okay? But the question is, how are you going to do it? How are you going to approach this problem? And in that sense, it's similar to the situation I've been talking about in Ireland. How are you going to approach the problem? Are you going to approach it from a completely secular point of view? Verschieben Sie alle ab? With that handsome AI-generated pilot flying all those people you don't like back to... This is fantasy. It's kind of a sexual fantasy as well. Is that the way you're going to address this issue? If you address it that way, I think you're going to fail. I would love to have a discussion in German based on the research that I've done, because I've done a lot of research in Germany and the Germans don't know about it. I just got a letter from a seminary. You know, it's like the Nicodemus Society over here. I have seminarians who are going to become priests who understand that the current neocon Catholicism is not an accurate representation of the gospel. And he's asking me for books, recommending books and so on and so forth, back and forth. I'm just hoping it will happen. But right now there's this, maybe it will happen with a new regime here. I don't know. That's all the future. It's just right now we've reached a situation of paralysis because the Germans are so full of fear because their government doesn't represent them. The Green is called the Ampel Coalition. The Ampel is a traffic light. So it's red, yellow, green. It doesn't represent the German people. It does not represent the German people. It doesn't represent their interests. If it did, it would look into who blew up the pipeline. It would work to the restoration of the pipeline. It would work toward getting out of NATO. It would stop sending weapons to the Ukraine. All of these things are going to have to happen, and it's going to mean the end of NATO. That's an obsolete thing. It should have gone out of existence in 1989. The neocons took it over. The Jews now have launched us into a war with Russia using NATO as this vehicle. All of this has to stop. All of this has to break down so that we will have the ability to start talking again. It will be similar in Germany to what happened with the fall of the Berlin Wall when that whole East, the Deutsche Demokratische Republik was discredited in the eyes of Germans. They opened the Stasi files. And at that point you had a new era, which was shut down when the pipeline got blown up. So all that's the type of thing that has to happen across the board before we can have any meaningful dialogue in Germany.
All right, want to do one more?
All right, one more.
All right, from PDL on Telegram. Aren't Muslims Sharia law going to follow the path of Jews, dual citizenship issue? I'm assuming in American government, essentially.
If you think that Sharia law will be imposed in any place of the United States of America, any city, even Dearborn, you're crazy. It's never going to happen. So I just don't see. Are you saying that Muslims have dual loyalty to what? I don't see it. They have an identity. The Muslims are so deeply divided among themselves that I just don't see these issues arising here. I think I'm working with Converse. He's a Pashtun. He's trying to create a kind of anti-Jewish coalition. It's a difficult job to do, but I mean, the common identity we share is as Americans. I think that if you want to update the triple melting pot, you're going to have Muslims because they have enough people now. I think they're more Muslims here than there are Jews. So I think that that's going to be part of the, they're going to be integrated into this American identity in a way that is possible for them, but not possible for Jews, because there is no group on earth like the Jews. Absolutely. It's the only group like that, okay, who still feel that they are God's chosen people because they were once God's chosen people. There's nothing like this group in any other group on the face of this earth.
All right, there you guys have it. Thanks again. EMJ Live is every Friday at 5 Eastern Standard Time. If you're not already, please subscribe to Culture Wars Magazine at culturewars.com. And then all of Dr. Jones' books can only be found and bought at fidelitypress.org. Make sure to subscribe to the Telegram, the Cozy, the Gab, the BitChute, the Twitter, all that stuff. Like the video wherever you're at. Dr. Jones, final words.
Yes, God bless America. Thanks for listening.
All right, we'll see you guys next week. God bless.